Good afternoon. You're listening to CKUT Radio in Montreal, Quebec. I'm Joe Broadhurst. I'm pleased to be joined on the phone with the Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada, Mr. Alex Neve. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Amnesty International sent out a press release on January 20th entitled Possible Landings of CIA Planes in Canada. And I was wondering if you could discuss or tell our listeners the background behind this story and the state's response to your request for information regarding it.
Well, many of your listeners have probably followed over the last several years the mounting concerns about what's come to be known as the practice of extraordinary rendition, which has gained prominence as one of the major strategies in the U.S. and other governments, but primarily the U.S.'s counterterrorism approach. Extraordinary rendition is a process through which individuals who are suspects or witnesses are or somehow of interest in the course of national security investigations are picked up, apprehended, abducted outside of usual legal frameworks. So they're not arrested in the way that otherwise criminal suspects would be. They're not charged. They're not given notification of their right to counsel. They're not given any of the protections that govern how and when and where people should actually be imprisoned. And instead, they find themselves shipped off halfway around the world, sometimes to secret detention centers that no one even knows about, other times to well-known and very notorious detention centers in countries like Syria and Egypt, where human rights violations are commonplace, where torture is rampant, and where individuals can be held for weeks, months, or even years without any charge, without any trial, and simply the daily reality of torture and harsh treatment. Canadians in particular will be aware, of course, of the case of Meher Arar, a Canadian citizen who experienced exactly that treatment when he was passing through John F. Kennedy Airport in New York City on his way home from a family vacation. Ended up sent halfway around the world in a private jet and spent a year languishing and being subjected to brutal torture in a Syrian jail cell. These are the concerns that are at stake here, and recently reports have emerged that some of these planes, or at least planes associated with the CIA, have on occasion been landing and taking off from airstrips in a number of different locations in Canada. Now, the concerns not only arising in Canada, there's been a large number of reports of similar landings and takeoffs within Europe as well. But we're focused on what's been happening in this country. While we're concerned, we want to make sure that none of those flights have been shipping other Meher Arars off to foreign jail cells where they're going to be subjected to human rights abuses. Because if Canada is allowing flights of that nature to land here and take off, even if that's the limit, the extent of our involvement, that makes us complicit. It raises legal concerns, but it very clearly also raises deep moral concerns. We simply should not be countenancing any cooperation in that kind of conduct. So we've written twice in the last several months to the Canadian government raising these concerns and pressing for there to be a thorough and independent review of these cases and that government officials report back publicly about what's happened. And we're deeply disappointed at what has been at best a very lukewarm response from the Canadian government.
In November, on the 21st and 22nd, during some debates between the MPs, they had requested information regarding certain flights, and the state's response was that there was nobody on board. And that seems to be the argument that they're sticking to, is that they're not participating in CIA renditions because there aren't prisoners on board at the time. Am I correct in saying that?
Well, all we've really heard so far is, and this came out early last week in media coverage, is that government officials have carried out a review of 55 flights that had been brought into question, and that they have determined there were no, quote, illegal activities involved with those flights. We've pressed back asking for clarification as to what standard of illegality the government was looking for. Was this simply a review to determine whether or not those planes had met aviation requirements, had filed flight logs, and had their safety equipment in order, and it had the right kinds of safety checks and those sorts of technical legal requirements? Or, as we've asked and would expect, did the government push hard to investigate whether or not there were any international human rights law concerns about violations of international human rights law in any way associated with these flights? So far, the government has refused to disclose the details of how the reviews were carried out, including, so far, a refusal to make it clear which legal standards were being used in determining whether or not there were concerns about those flights. That's a level of secrecy which is simply unacceptable. At the very least, we need to be told what was the government reviewing for, what laws was the government holding up against these flights, and on what basis have they determined that there's no concerns.
European newspapers had reported that there had been several stops at an airport in Iceland called the Sola Airport, but airport officials were not allowed to approach the plane.
There's all sorts of concerns and suspicions about dozens, hundreds of flights around the world, many of them in Europe. And it's perhaps notable to look at Europe for a moment, where the degree of concern and level of response from European governments has been markedly different from what we've seen here in Canada. Canada, where there's seemed to be a real reluctance to take this seriously at all, whereas in Europe there's a number of quite probing investigations that have been launched by individual governments, including some that have launched judicial inquiries looking at this. And then more broadly within the Council of Europe, which is to a certain degree, a regional United Nations equivalent of European governments, the Council, 2 or 3 months back, launched its own investigation, appointed a respected Swiss senator to lead that investigation. And just yesterday, his first interim report was released. His investigations continue, and he's certainly pointed to quite a wide range of concerns, including, actually, in his report, which was focused on Europe, he has highlighted the concern and the failure to date of the Canadian government to be fulsome in accounting for what's been happening here.
How exactly are you asking people to participate in trying to find out this information or helping you extract this information from the government?
We have indeed been asking people to do that, and anyone who does want to take action can find materials in support of that on our website, which is amnesty.ca. Obviously, we're in a time of political change now, and while nominally Anne McClellan remains responsible for public safety and Jean Lapierre remains responsible for transport until their replacements are named, it's probably not exactly a period in which we can expect them to be taking fulsome action. Nonetheless, people can raise this concern with their MP from whichever party the MP originates. And then once we clearly know who the members of the new government are going to be, certainly at that point we will be pressing and pressing hard for there to be a more fulsome approach taken by the Canadian government than we've seen in the past.
Before we go, I was hoping that you could express to our listeners what exactly is at stake here for Canadians, for how Canadians stand as far as their adherence to international law and how we approach rights on an international level.
Well, obviously, we very much accept the fact that governments need to take action to respond to threats of terrorism. There's actually a human rights obligation to do so. Governments, the Canadian government, the U.S. government, all governments, are obliged under international human rights law to protect their citizens from violence like terrorism. But they must do so in ways which are in keeping with other international human rights obligations, like the protection against torture, like the right to a fair trial, like the right not to be arbitrarily arrested, all of which are blatantly ignored, undermined, and violated in the practice of extraordinary rendition. As Canadians, we need to be certain and confident that everything about how we are carrying out counterterrorism practices is consistent with what human rights demands of us. Anything else will only lead to injustice and insecurity and gets us nowhere in the end. And that does not only mean what we ourselves are doing, our direct responsibility for the direct actions of our own government officials. It also means making sure that we're not providing assistance or being complicit in any way with illegal practices that other governments, including the United States, may be pursuing. That's what's at stake here, and we need to see the Canadian government firmly commit to an approach to security that puts human rights first.
I want to thank the Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada, Mr. Alex Neff, for joining me this afternoon. Can you tell our listeners what the website is?
www.amnesty.ca.
Thank you very much, and have a nice afternoon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.